ਯੂਨੀਅਨ ਮੰਨਦੀ ਸੀ ਅਮਰੀਕਾ ਦੇ ਤਾਕਤ ਨੂੰ, ਪਰ ਉਸ ਸਮਾਂ ਲੰਘ ਗਿਆ।
Welcome back to Clutch Time with Mike on the Mic. It's your boy Mike, and I'm back with another episode. That was The Rock coming back on Monday Night Raw on the first day of the new year, showing back up and dropping an absolute bomb. I know everybody doesn't follow wrestling like I do. I still follow wrestling, still love to watch it. He came back and he said this.
I'm going to go get something to eat. When The Rock goes out to get something to eat tonight in San Diego, should The Rock sit in a booth? Or should The Rock sit at the bar? Yeah, The Rock loves a bar too. Or should The Rock sit at the head of the table? I love you too, San Diego, and that's what I thought. If you're some man, what The Rock is cooking.
So that was The Rock basically calling out his cousin, Roman Reigns, who has been the WWE Universal World Heavyweight Champion since August of 2020. So he's had the belt for 4 years. He's about to headline his fourth straight WrestleMania. He's on top of the game. He's the best wrestler in the world. He's the best thing going today in WWE. And in real life, him and The Rock are blood cousins. They grew up together, their family. Roman Reigns was in The Rock's movie, Hobbs and Shaw. And this has been some years in the making. The Rock did come out and say that the plan was for him and Roman to headline WrestleMania last year when it was in Hollywood, but they could never get the timing down. You know, The Rock is a very busy man being in Hollywood and all of that, so they couldn't get the timing down and it didn't work. But now that Vince McMahon is gone and WWE has been bought by Endeavor, which owns UFC as well, they've basically made Triple H the head of everything. He's the head of creative. He's the head of just about everything that Vince McMahon used to do. That's what Triple H does now. And Triple H has a lot of pull. He came from the same time as The Rock. Him and The Rock had great rivalry back in the day, back in the early 2000s, late 90s and all of that. So naturally, I'm pretty sure if Triple H calls, The Rock is going to answer. And it makes sense because the whole Roman Reigns persona is he's the head of the table. He's the tribal chief. He leads that family, the Samoan family of him, the Usos, Solo Sikoa, The Rock's dad, Rocky Johnson, The Rock's granddad, High Chief Peter Maivia, Rikishi. Rikishi is the father of the Usos, Jimmy and Jey Uso. So they have a big family that's been all through WWE. So naturally, the next step in the storyline is to have The Rock face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. And I know for some WWE fans, they don't want to see it because they feel like it's taking the opportunity away from Cody Rhodes. They want Cody Rhodes to finish the story. But to me, WWE is all about making money. And as if you watch, follow this sport as long as I've had, they've always gone with the money match. From let me see. WrestleMania 14 was Stone Cold and Shawn Michaels. Stone Cold was the hottest thing running at the time, and Shawn Michaels is the best performer to ever be in WWE without a shadow of a doubt. And Shawn Michaels had a broken back, and it was time for him to pass the torch to Stone Cold. So Stone Cold ended up winning the belt at WrestleMania 14. Then at WrestleMania 15, Stone Cold was still the hottest thing going, and The Rock was on his way up. So, of course, that was the money match. That's what everybody wanted to see. Then WrestleMania 16, The Rock was still the hottest thing in going in wrestling. Stone Cold at the time, unfortunately, was hurt with the neck surgery and everything that he had to have to repair his broken neck and all of that. So The Rock main event at WrestleMania 16. Then in WrestleMania 17, a year later in the year 2001, The Rock was still the biggest thing going, him and Stone Cold. Stone Cold had came back and was making his mark. He won the Royal Rumble in 2001, so naturally, the match to be was The Rock and Stone Cold. And then WrestleMania 18, while Triple H main evented the WrestleMania against Chris Jericho, the biggest match of the night was The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, which was one era against another, two of the biggest wrestlers to ever be in WWE and the sport of wrestling. So The Rock has always had the name. He's always had the persona, the charisma to do whatever he wants. And for me, that's what I want to see at night two of WrestleMania. I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know if they're going to have The Rock enter the Royal Rumble or what they're going to do, or he's just going to face Roman Reigns. Because to me, I know the idea has been floated around that they want to have The Rock wrestle Roman at maybe the Elimination Chamber and have the match happen there. But I'm sorry, the match is too big. It has to be night two main event of WrestleMania. I know that's going to push Cody somewhere. I don't know who Cody's going to fight. They can have Cody fight Randy Orton for all I care. They can have them rehash the whole legacy thing from back in the day when Cody was breaking into WWE and he was paired with Randy Orton. As long as the main event of night one needs to be CM Punk versus Seth Rollins, because they have real heat there. They really don't like each other in real life, and that just a great money match. We've been wanting to see that, and CM Punk will finally get his main event at WrestleMania. That's what I think he deserves, and I think that's one of the reasons why he came back. Night two needs to be The Rock and Roman Reigns. It can be for the title, which if it's for the title, we know The Rock isn't going to win. But I don't care if we know that he isn't going to win. I just want to see the match. I want to see the build up to it, the storylines. Roman Reigns is going to be on SmackDown on Friday, so I'm sure he's going to address the fact that The Rock came back, which I can't wait to hear what he has to say. So I'm all for it. If The Rock is going to be there for WrestleMania, that needs to be the match that happens. And yes, it needs to be for the title. I don't think that Roman needs to drop the title yet. Yes, he's had it for going on 4 years, but he's still the best thing going in WWE right now. Him and Seth Rollins are carrying the company on their back. I know Roman doesn't wrestle as much because he is not a full-time wrestler right now, but it doesn't matter. He's still a main event attraction. He still puts fans in the stands. He still draws a great reaction when his music hits and he comes out. And it's to the point now, every time he wrestles, it's like, is this going to be the match that he finally loses the belt? Is this where it's going to happen? And for 4 years, it hasn't happened. He's wrestled John Cena. He's wrestled Brock Lesnar, Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins. He's wrestled them all. I believe he's wrestled Randy Orton, and God rest his soul, he wrestled Bray Wyatt, The Fiend. He's done it all. So him going against The Rock is what we need to see, what needs to happen. And Triple H knows the pulse of the WWE universe, and I think he knows that that match has to happen at WrestleMania. I wouldn't let nobody talk me out of it. If that's what it's going to be, that's what it needs to be, and that's what I want to see, because I'm going to be front and center for The Rock versus Roman. If it doesn't happen at WrestleMania, I'm going to be very upset. I'm still going to watch the match, but it needs to happen at WrestleMania. That's just how I feel about it, and that's what it needs to be. But enough about wrestling. Let's get into our NFL picks for the week. I know I've been gone for 2 weeks, y'all, but it's the holidays, Christmas, New Year's, and all of that. I just didn't have the time between traveling and working and, you know, just letting storylines build up. But let me go over our NFL picks for the week. And before I start there, I just want to give a quick shout out to my Texas Longhorns. Made the college football playoff, going into a 12-1. They lost, their season came to an end on Monday against Washington. They lost 37-31. But they showed that the Longhorns are back down there in Austin. Sark has got the train rolling again. And I'll let anybody that knows me and anybody that talked to me about it knows that when Steve Sarkisian got hired, I wasn't a fan because I didn't think he could handle it. His track record as a head coach wasn't great. And him having the issues that he had, the personal issues with the drinking and everything, getting fired from USC, not being able to find a job, going to Alabama, being the offensive coordinator, leaving, going to the NFL, then going back to Alabama and then winning the national championship with Devontae Smith and Bryce Young and all them boys. And then he parlayed that into the head job at Texas. And being the head coach at Texas is different. You have the politic, you have to cozy up to the high school coaches in Texas. It's a demanding job, and not everybody can do it. And he's handled that with grace, and I love to see that Texas went 12-1 this year. They went to Alabama, handed Nick Saban his worst loss as the Alabama head coach at home. They won the Big 12, and their last year in the Big 12, they had Javondre Sweat as a unanimous first-team All-American. He won the Outland Trophy as the best lineman in the country. Xavier Worthy was an All-American wide receiver. I believe Quinn Ewers was second-team All-Big 12. Jonathan Brooks, who tore his ACL, was second-team All-Big 12. Adonai Mitchell, the transfer from Georgia, was second-team All-Big 12. Byron Murphy was second-team All-Big – or I think he was first-team All-Big 12, a second-team All-American, like through the AP and everything like that. So, I mean, he's building a monster down there in Austin, and they're going into the SEC next year where it's going to be a lot different – playing against the Alabamas and the Georgias and the LSUs and the Kentuckys and Florida and all of that. I'm not going to say Texas A&M because Texas A&M had a 10-year head start in the SEC. They've never competed for a championship in the SEC. They never made the college football playoff. And their best finish in the SEC in their own division was third, let alone being in a conference championship game. So for all those Texas A&M fans out there saying that they're not little brother and this, that, and the third, you are. You guys are a joke of a program. That's just how I feel about it. But let's get into these NFL picks. Let's see here. There's no Thursday night game. Game start on Saturday. We got the Steelers and the Ravens. Lamar Jackson is the MVP. Listen to me. Lamar Jackson is the MVP. Ever since 2 weeks ago when I came on here and said that I was talking about Cam Newton's comments about game managers and all that, and I said Lamar Jackson is a game changer. Lamar Jackson is the MVP. Lamar Jackson went to I believe that game was in San Francisco, if I'm not mistaken. He went to San Francisco. He beat the 49ers. Brock Purdy had one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. He threw four interceptions. Just wasn't his night. And then Lamar Jackson came out against the Dolphins and threw five touchdowns. He had more touchdowns than he had incompletions. So right now, barring some horrific game against the Steelers, Lamar Jackson is the MVP. That'll be his second MVP in his career. And if he doesn't win it, the only other person I believe it could go to is CMC. Because CMC has been carrying the 49ers offensively. He's been dynamic with the ball. I believe he has something like 18 rushing touchdowns. He's well over 1,000 yards rushing, and he's a receiving threat. So it's between them two, but for me, it's Lamar Jackson. I got the Ravens in that game. It's at home. It's in Baltimore. I got the Ravens in that game in a close one, something like 24-21. I think that the Steelers will come to play because the Steelers come to play. Mike Tomlin's still not going to have a losing season in 17 years of being a head coach. So obviously we know he knows what he's doing. But give me the Ravens in that game. The Texans and the Colts both come in at 9-7. Excuse me. Give me the Texans in that game. Again, I think that the offensive rookie of the year is definitely C.J. Stroud, the quarterback for the Texans. It's in Indianapolis, but give me the Texans. I think they bounce back. Then the next game is the Jaguars and the Titans. Give me the Jaguars. I've lost all faith in my Titans. They are done for the year. If the Jaguars win this game, they'll win the AFC South. But if the Titans want to play spoiler, it's in Tennessee. They can play spoiler, and if they beat the Jaguars, then it opens the door up for the Texans or the Colts to win the AFC South. And the Titans can play the Jaguars back for last year when the Jaguars came to Tennessee and beat them and cost them the division title and a spot in the playoffs. the Buccaneers and the Panthers. Give me the Buccaneers. The Panthers are just not good. There's no way to put – there's nothing to say about it. They're just not good. Give me the Buccaneers in that game. Then we got the Browns and the Bengals. The Browns have already punched their way into the playoffs. And listen to me. I know it's only been five games. But if Joe Flacco doesn't win Comeback Player of the Year, I don't know what's the point of having the award. My man was sitting on the couch. He came in, and ever since he's been the Browns starting quarterback, they have looked like a completely different team. He has looked dynamic, like he's found the fountain of youth. He has looked fantastic. The Browns look like a real threat in the AFC playoffs. The Bengals, unfortunately, Joe Burrow's not playing. Their quarterback, Jake Browning, was looking good there, but he's come back to earth. And I think the Browns go into Cincinnati and beat them handily. Give me the Browns in that game. The Vikings and the Lions, listen to me. Listen to me. The end of that Lions and Cowboys game was, I don't want to say rigged, because I just don't believe that. I think there's way too many. There's been way too many players and way too many refs that if the NFL was really rigging games, they would have came out and said something. Might cost you your professionalism, or it might, hell, with all that money, it might even cost you a life with the way that the world is today. I don't know. I'm just saying. But I think there's way too many players and way too many referees that have been in the league that if the games were rigged, somebody would have came out and said something by now. But the way that they lost that game, one, I think the refs got it wrong, because I believe that the offensive tackle that caught the two-point conversion, I believe he reported to the referee because they showed video showing him talking to the ref, and I think the ref either just didn't hear him or the ref didn't want to hear him, because Dan Campbell came out and said that he tells the refs everything that's going to happen in the game as far as what plays are going to call and what to look for. So he said he went over it very detailed with the refs. So it's not like the refs didn't know. I believe that ref just didn't want to hear the guy and just decided to throw the flag, because the flag didn't come until after they had celebrated and damn near walked to the sideline. That's when they threw the flag. So I feel like that was on the refs. And then two, once they called it, they threw the flag and they moved them back, and they had to go from the 7-yard line, and then Michael Parsons was offsides and they didn't get it. At that point, you know what? I'm playing with fire. I just had a penalty on us that cost us the 2 points, then a penalty on them, and yes, they moved it up half the distance to the goal, but regardless of the fact, I would have just kicked the field goal, went into overtime. I get it. You had it in your mind. You want to go for two and win the game so you can get out of there. But it's too much. It's too much. I would have kicked the field goal and went into overtime and played my odds there. If I lost in overtime, okay, I can eat that. But I don't want to lose because we're going into our bag of tricks, and we've given them our best play. We got it, but they caught a flag, and then they went offsides, and that would have even the play on offsides, they still ran the play. It didn't work. And then the play that you guys got stopped, Jared Goff has to throw a better ball. Jared Goff leads him, and he catches it. Dude walks into the end zone. But me, I know me. I would have just kicked the field goal and tied it up and went to overtime. But give me the Lions in that game. It's in Detroit. They've already got the NFC South. And because they lost that game, I believe that cost them the chance at the number one seed in the NFC, which would have been great for them because they got a week off. And then they had two home playoff games. Had they won a divisional round and went into the conference championship. But now, if they end up playing the 49ers, they're going to have to go to San Francisco versus being at home in Detroit. The Jets and the Patriots is the worst on the worst. I don't know. Give me the Jets. Give me the Jets. The Falcons and the Saints. Give me the Saints only because it's in New Orleans. The Seahawks and the Cardinals. The Cardinals with the big upset of the Eagles last week. I'm going to say this now, and I know my boy Ray and anybody else that listens to this that's not an Eagles or this Eagles fan, they're not going to like this. But I believe the Eagles are going to be one and done in the playoffs this year. Their defense is absolutely terrible. Even with letting Matt Patricia call the defense. Their secondary is horrible. Like, they can't stay in front of anybody. They just don't have the same ferocity and attention to detail that they had last year, and it's costing them in games. I believe they were up 21-6 or something like that on the Cardinals, and they ended up losing 31-28. So that's nothing but the defense not coming to, like, not stepping up when the game mattered, and that is bad play calling on the offensive side of the ball. And I did read a report yesterday that said that the Eagles' locker room is fractured, and the center of it is A.J. Brown, because when he gets frustrated, he lashes out and he says whatever he got to say, being a diva. So if that's the case, then if I was Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, get him up out of there. If you're causing that kind of dysfunction in my locker room, I don't care who you are. You got to go. It could be Tom Brady and Randy Moss in the locker room going at it. Somebody got to go. Whoever they deem is the one that's causing the problems got to go. This is professional sports. Either you can get in line and get with it, or you can go play somewhere else. Hell, we can trade you back. I'd love for them to trade him back to Tennessee, or release him, or send him somewhere where it'll humble him. Send him to the Bears, something like that, to where you're going to have to really earn your keep in the NFL, because a bad attitude will have you out the league in a quick, fast, and in a hurry. So if that's the case, get him up out of there. But give me the Seahawks in that game. I know it's in Arizona, but give me the Seahawks. The Bears and the Packers, give me the Packers in that game. Chiefs and the Chargers, give me the Chiefs. The Chargers need to go back to the drawing board, find them a coach, and figure out what they're going to do, because as much talent as on that team, they should be better than 5-11, but they're not. So give me the Chiefs in that game. The Broncos and the Raiders. I kind of feel bad for Russell Wilson, because it feels like he's running into that situation like that Vince Young ran into. And what I mean is, when Vince Young in 2006, when he was drafted by the Tennessee Titans, the head coach at the time, Jeff Fisher, immediately did not like Vince Young. So it felt like Vince Young had to prove himself not only to his teammates, to the fans, to the organization, but also to his head coach. And when your head coach doesn't like you, any screw up you have, you're going to be on a short leash. And I think for Russell Wilson, he ran into that with Sean Payton. Sean Payton got the job, and Sean Payton was like, well, I didn't choose Russell Wilson, and I don't like him as my quarterback. And I believe it was somewhere in October, they went to him and told him, if you don't restructure your contract, we're going to cut you or trade you. And he's been living, he's been having to play with that ever since. So by knowing that in the back of your head, like, yo, if I don't restructure my contract, they're going to cut me or trade me, you know, that's undue pressure. It's already hard enough to play in the NFL. But with all of that, they had it in for him. So Sean Payton's probably going to get what he wants. They're probably going to end up cutting Russell Wilson or trading him. To who, I don't know. I don't know who wants him. I don't know if they're going to get the Russell Wilson that's been with the Broncos, or they're going to get the Russell Wilson that was with Seattle. But, I mean, it's business. That's how it goes. And it kind of makes me look at Sean Payton differently, because it's like, damn, what are you doing to your quarterback? Like, even if I was a head coach and I had beef with a player, I didn't like a certain player, I'm still going to give it my all as a coach, because that's a reflection of me. And if anybody knows anything about the NFL, you guys know that if a coach is brought in and he's a big-name coach and the team's still not performing, they're going to get rid of the coach before they get rid of the player, unless that player has come out and done something that's egregious and just can't be overlooked. They're going to get rid of the coach first. That's just how it goes. But give me the Raiders in that game. Then the Eagles and the Giants. It's in New York. I'm going to pick the upset. Give me the Giants. The Giants about came back on the Eagles a few weeks ago. So give me the Giants in that game. Wouldn't surprise me if the Eagles lost. It really wouldn't, but give me the Giants. Then the Rams and the 49ers. I got to shout out Matt Stafford for getting the Rams in the playoffs. I didn't think with the way that they have lost talent and the way that players have gone in and out that they would be able to get to where they're at, but they're in the playoffs going against the Rams in week 18, excuse me. I'm going to pick an upset. Give me the Rams in that game. I can see the Rams going into San Francisco and beating the 49ers. The 49ers really don't have nothing to play for. I believe they have the number one seed locked up. I could be wrong about that. Fact check me if I'm wrong. But yeah, give me the Rams in that game. And then we got the Cowboys and the Commanders. The Cowboys are leading the NFC East because the Eagles just can't win a game. Every time the Cowboys lose, you think, oh, man, the Eagles got that division wrapped up, and then the Eagles turn around and lose. So they probably lost that division. Now they're going to be a wild card. Instead of having a home game, they're going to have to go on the road. That's why I think they're going to be one and done. Give me the Cowboys in that. Well, wait, it's on the road. Give me the Cowboys in that game. I don't believe in the Commanders, even though it's on the road. Give me the Cowboys in that game. And then the Bills and the Dolphins, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I read somewhere, if the Bills win this game, they'll win the NFC or win the AFC East, and if the Dolphins lose, they'll go to the wild card spot. So if I was Miami, whatever A game I need, you better bring it, because if you lose and you go on, you got to go on the road. The playoffs are a different animal. That run and gun that y'all are doing during the season, all that might not work in the playoffs. Y'all have already lost to the Bills once this year after y'all hung 70 on the Broncos and then came out to the Bills and lost. Josh Allen is on a roll right now. I was giving Josh Allen hell early on in the season about his turnovers, but he's turned it around. He's looked every bit of him being a top five quarterback that they call him, so I got to give him his props there. This is Sunday night game. Give me the Dolphins in that game, only because they're at home. Yeah, give me the Dolphins in that game. I think the Dolphins won a close one, something like 27-24. I think Tua has the ball last and is able to go down and kick a field goal and win the game. Yeah, give me the Dolphins in that game. Barely. Give me the Dolphins in that game. But that's it for the first segment, y'all. When we come back, I'm going to play a clip from the Stephen A. Smith show that I want y'all to hear, that I want to talk about. And I also want to talk about my favorite player ever in Allen Iverson, about something he said that I didn't agree with that contradicts something he said before. So as soon as we come back from the break, I'm going to play that clip. I'm going to play those two clips for you and give y'all my take on those. So hold on for me, y'all. Be right back. All right, y'all, I'm back from an extended hiatus on the break in between segments there. Something was going on with the website that I use to record these podcast episodes, so I had to reach out to tech support, and they told me something was going on, so I had to wait till it fixed. Finally fixed, so I'm recording now. It's currently 12:27 in the morning. I have to work tomorrow, but I wanted to get this done so I can get this episode out tomorrow. And as I said before I went to break, there was an interview done by Rachel Nichols with my favorite player of all time, Allen Iverson, yesterday, or not yesterday, but a few days ago. And a particular portion came up that I want y'all to hear. And then I'm going to read you a quote that Allen Iverson said a year ago, which is why some of these celebrities, when they say stuff, before you go on an interview, I would ask the person that's interviewing me what questions you're going to ask me so I know. And then I want to make sure I don't go back and say something. I don't want to go back on something I said beforehand. Now, if the person or people are still playing, then I can understand that. Like if you say that you thought last year Josh Allen was better than Patrick Mahomes, for example. But then this year you come back and say, well, no, I think Pat Mahomes is better than Josh Allen. That's cool because they're still playing. But once certain people are retired, like Shannon Sharpe said, they can't add to their story. They can't add to their resume. Their resume is complete, done. It's on LinkedIn. You can see it. They can't add to it. There's nothing else that can be done to it. So I'm going to play this clip for y'all. And y'all tell, and I'm going to tell y'all what I think about what was said. And like I said, this is Rachel Nichols talking to Allen Iverson.
Another one of the all-time greats, Kobe Bryant, in your draft class. And he became, in his words, obsessed with you. He said, early in your rookie years, you had a game where you scored 35 and he scored 2 points in 5 minutes the same night. Didn't feel good about that. In fact, he said, quote, when I checked into my hotel room later that night and saw the 35, he said, I lost it. I flipped the table, threw the chairs, broke the TV. There's more. He said, I obsessively read every article and book I could find about AI, watched every game he had played going back to high school. He said he studied shark attack videos to think about angles that he could approach you at because you move so fast, and he thought that might help you. I mean, when you hear that, he broke a TV in his hotel room because he saw you had a good game and he didn't.
I don't know. I just look at that as, yeah, that's Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, but you, he said you were the one. He didn't say I was obsessed with everyone in the league. But he didn't say I watched everyone else's game back till high school. He said it was you.
With Kobe, he was so different to where it was like, Phil, I want the assignment. You know what I mean? Take Fisher off him. I want the assignment. I've never seen nobody as competitive like him, but Mike, that's it. Like when people talk about, you know, your favorite players or the best players in the world, you know, I say Mike and I say Kobe. You know what I mean? And then everybody else.
LeBron's after that for you?
Definitely.
Okay, so that was Allen Iverson, like I said, talking to Rachel Nichols in an interview a few days ago. And this is what Allen Iverson said like 1 year ago in this on the same subject about LeBron, Kobe, and Mike. He said, I hate it because I love them both. I love both of them so much, and they both of them did so much for our game. Allen Iverson told Inscape, LeBron, I think, to me, is the best overall basketball player that we'll ever see. If you look in the dictionary, look up basketball player, there'll be a picture of LeBron. So last year, LeBron was the GOAT, and then on this interview with Rachel Nichols, he said it's Mike and then it's Kobe. Now, I know in the past Iverson has said that Mike was his GOAT and that's just how it's going to be. But, you know, opinions change. And me, I'm one of them people where I think LeBron is the GOAT. I think LeBron is the best player I've ever seen in my life. He's not my favorite player ever. Allen Iverson is my favorite player ever. So that's why this one kind of struck with me. But LeBron James, to me, is the best basketball player I've ever seen. And Kobe is definitely a top 10 basketball player that I've ever seen, too. Now, y'all know how I feel about Kobe, and I get into arguments about Kobe Bryant all the time. I've kind of toned those arguments down since he passed away. I don't want to speak ill on the dead. That's just, you know, I just don't think that's right. But, of course, being such a big part of basketball history, he's going to come up. Like, it's inevitable. He's going to come up. And one of the other talking heads that we always hear on TV is Stephen A. Smith. And Stephen A. Smith had this to say.
Player in NBA history. Kobe Bryant is not the second greatest player in NBA history. That's just not true. It's just not. The points per game didn't equal LeBron's. The assists didn't equal LeBron's. The rebounds didn't equal LeBron's. The durability didn't equal LeBron's. He's got more rings. But we can't ignore the fact that the first three came with Shaq in his prime. One of the top two most dominant figures in the history of basketball. That dude. Now, Shaq didn't win without him. I know who Kobe is. I know who Kobe was. I know what Kobe meant and will forever mean to the game of basketball. And top 10 all time, no doubt about it. But he ain't top two. Come on, y'all. LeBron didn't have Shaq as a teammate. Kyrie and Kevin Love, okay. D-Wade, Bosh, Ray Allen, okay. You cannot put him number two over LeBron. You cannot put him number two over Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kobe was number two to MJ as a two guard, and he might be number two as a Laker to Irvin Magic Johnson, depending on who you ask. But Kobe.
So that was Stephen A. Smith on the Stephen A. Smith Show, a show that he does every day, talking about he was reacting to Allen Iverson comments about Kobe Bryant and having him ranked number two all time. And for me, I get what he was saying. Like, I get it. Kobe played with Shaq for his first three championships, and Shaq won all three finals MVPs. And the one part that he had wrong was saying that Shaq didn't win without Kobe. Shaq went ahead 2 years later after he left LA and won another championship with D-Wade. And then Kobe ended up winning two more with Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum in 2009 and then again in 2010. He repeated in 2009, 2010. And then after that, Kobe, I don't want to say he hit the wall, but I just think he reached the peak of his powers. In 2011, I don't know what seed they were in the Western Conference, but they ended up getting swept by the Dallas Mavericks, who went on to beat LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh in the finals, 4-2. And then in 2012, I think the Lakers lost in the first round. They might not even made the playoffs. I'm not exactly sure. I can't remember. And then I know, I think 2012 was the year that Kobe got hurt. He tore his Achilles, and then the Lakers ended up losing in the first round with Steve Nash and Dwight Howard and all them that was on the team. But then the last 3 years after that, before he retired, Kobe just was a shell of himself. Now, I know an Achilles is a hard thing to come back from, especially being at the age that he was. But Kobe was still scoring the ball, but his team wasn't winning whatsoever. So when Stephen A. said he's got – LeBron's got the longevity thing, LeBron is in year 21, and currently right now I think he's averaging 26-7-7, maybe 25.8. So you round it up, 26-7-7. Now the Lakers aren't the best team in the league right now. They're, you know, I think like the 10th seed in the Western Conference. They're just not gelling. Darvin Ham needs to be fired. He's not a good coach. Like, his rotations are so suspect, and the way that he plays the players just doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you have a three-guard lineup on the floor when they're consistently getting beat and getting scored on, and you don't make any changes until either another coach says something to you like, hey, we need to switch this up, or the other team goes on some crazy 18, 19, 20-point game, 20 points in a row to zero run on the Lakers, and then you got to bring LeBron and AD back in the game and hope that they can stem the tide and turn the game around. Like, that's not how you coach. I mean, I don't know that much about basketball. I just know the basics, but I've never played organized basketball. I've never coached it, nothing like that. So I just – what I see on TV is what I know, and from the people that I've heard talk about it is what I know. But I just know that if your best player on the team is in year 21 and your second best player on the team is a power forward, then you need to stagger their minutes. You need to have LeBron play half the first and have AD play most of the first. Take LeBron out, and then when it's time to take AD out, put LeBron back in, and then bring AD back in the second quarter and let them finish out the half that way. Same thing with the third and fourth quarter. I think LeBron is like second in the league in points per game. In the fourth quarter, I think he's averaging like 7.6 or 8 points per game in the fourth quarter, something like that. So Darvin Ham need to be fired. At this point, I'm sick of seeing it. The Lakers are playing tonight. I don't even know if they're winning. They were losing when last time I checked. They probably lost the game. Who knows? But back to what I was talking about. Like I said, for me, LeBron James is the best basketball player I've ever seen in my life. Just from the fact that he came in at 18 years old, he averaged 25-5 his rookie year, and then from that point on, for the last 19 seasons in a row, probably about to be 20 after this year, he's averaged over 25 points per game. So that means he is arguably the best scorer to ever play this game. Or like I said, arguably, you could say Mike and Kevin Durant score the ball better than LeBron James. I wouldn't argue with you there if that's who you felt like were the better scorers. But he's the all-time leading scorer in the NBA. He's fourth all-time in assists. He has over 10,000 rebounds. He's a walking triple-double. He's the model of consistency. He went to the finals 8 straight times, and I understand he's 4-6 in the finals. I get that. But you tell me, you take LeBron off those Cavs teams that play the Warriors, and you put Michael Jordan, and you tell me that they're going to make the finals. And I'm going to tell you, you smoking something, because we all know Mike was a scorer. He didn't really – I mean, he could pass the ball, but he wasn't the passer that LeBron was. Mike felt like the best way for him to win a game was for him to shoot a lot and score as much as he could. And that's not how LeBron plays the game. LeBron wants to get everybody involved. That's why you see him having double-digit assist games, and he rebounds the ball. He also scores at will. 27-7-7 is career average. So, like I said, give me LeBron twice on Sunday. I just think LeBron is the best player I've ever seen. And like I said at the beginning, when some of these celebrities and all-time great basketball players, which Allen Iverson is an all-time great, I would ask the interview. I'm sure they do, but just I know me. I don't want to come up and say – I don't want to today say – oh, I think LeBron is the best player ever, and then get on next week's podcast and say, oh, no, I think Michael Jordan is the best ever. Because then y'all are going to come for me like, bruh, you literally just said every time you brought up this subject on this podcast that LeBron was the best player you've ever seen, and now you're switching up with Michael Jordan. Like, what are you doing? You flip-flopping. That's just not what we do around here. So, like I said, for me, it's LeBron James, and then it's everybody else. If I had to have a top 10 all time, like I said, Kobe would be in my top 10. If I had a top 10 all time, it'd be LeBron 1, MJ 2. I would put Magic 3rd. I would put Shaq 4th, Kareem 5th. Who am I gonna eat? Tim Duncan 6th, Larry Bird 7th. I think I would have Kobe at 8. Nine, I would have Hakeem Olajuwon in there somewhere. And then 10, I'm missing somebody and it's not coming to me. 10, somebody, I'm missing some all-time great and I can't think of it. LeBron, MJ, Magic, Shaq, Kareem, Tim Duncan, Larry Bird, Kobe, Hakeem. You know what? Might shock some folks with this, and I know my boy DeAnthony's gonna be hyped because when he hears this, he's gonna be hyped. I would have to put Steph Curry at 10. Steph Curry's impact on the game of basketball is unquestionable. Like the fact that kids these days think they can shoot threes from the half court logo and ain't nothing but 6 years old is nothing but Steph Curry. That's all they see on TV and that's what they want to do. Everybody can't shoot like Steph Curry, but his impact on the game is undeniable. And he's a marksman, the greatest shooter that God ever created. So yeah, I'd have to put Steph at 10. I mean, if you want to take him out and put somebody else, I could see why. But for me, I'm gonna put Steph at 10. So DeAnthony, I hope you're happy with that. Yeah, man. I love the debates. I love when the Jordan LeBron debate comes up because it's always funny to hear Shannon Sharpe and Stephen A. Smith go back and forth about it. It's great to hear other former players go back and forth about it. You know, Skip believes that LeBron is barely top 10 all time. Like Skip is delusional. Skip is beyond delusional. But like hearing Gilbert Arenas talk about it on his podcast, and hearing Rashad McCants went off on Stephen A. Smith, I believe that was today or maybe it was yesterday, about him bringing up Kobe and him not liking it. But Rashad McCants says stuff on that podcast, and Rashad McCants be acting like he is some legendary basketball player, that he was like a 15-time All-Star, multiple-time world champion and all that. Rashad McCants was a joke in the NBA. This is truth be told. I think he's just cool with Gilbert Arenas, so that's why Gilbert Arenas got him on the podcast. But he's not who he portrays himself to be. He's not. So, yeah, I wish he'd shut up. But everybody else is cool. Like, I like hearing J.J. Redick talk, Kendrick Perkins, Shannon Sharpe, Stephen A. Smith, Jay Williams, Gilbert Arenas, all the smoke with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. When they have basketball players on there, that subject is always broached. So I love to hear it. Me and my boys in my group chat, me, Ray, Will, Dom, DeAnthony, and Chris, we argue about it all the time because Chris and Dom are Kobe fans, and me and Will are LeBron fans. DeAnthony's a Steph fan. Ray's a Melo fan. So when we start talking about rings, Ray really ain't got much to say because, you know, Melo ain't got no ring. But he says stuff just to get under my skin. He does it on purpose. I know he does. He'll look at it, read it. You know what? Let me click send. Let me aggravate Mike real quick. That's what he do. But it's cool. It's all love. It's my brother. It's all good. But that's all I got for y'all, man. I just wanted to give my thoughts on that. Like I said, I got LeBron as the best player ever. And I'd have Kobe at 8th and I'd have Steph at 10th. If Kevin Durant could win something outside of Golden State without Steph Curry, he could probably move in the top 10. But until then, it's not going to happen for me. He's just proven that he needed Steph Curry more than Steph Curry needed him, because Steph won one before KD got there and he won one after KD left. So Steph has proven that he can win without KD. KD has not proven that he can even make the finals without Steph Curry. I mean, no, he made the finals back in 2012 with the Thunder, but that was with two future MVPs in Russ and James Harden. But Kevin Durant, since he's played in Golden State, has done absolutely nothing. That first year in Brooklyn, I believe he was hurt still, so he didn't play. And then the next year, they made the playoffs, and then he had the epic game six against the Bucks. And then in game seven, he was basically a no-show. They lost. And then the year after that in Brooklyn, he got swept. Then he got traded to Phoenix, and they lost. They lost in the second round, I believe that was, to the Suns. Or, I mean, to the Nuggets, excuse me. They lost to the Nuggets in the second round. So he's done nothing since he left Golden State. And that's always going to be a talking point for Kevin Durant's career. Until he does something without Steph Curry, then it's always going to be looked at as, you needed Steph Curry. Steph Curry didn't need you. And I hate it for KD because he seems like he's a cool guy, but he's got thin skin. I mean, my man's had a burner account and got caught. So obviously that noise gets to him, and he hates to, you know, even broach the subject. But when it's all said and done and they start talking about his career, that point is going to come up. Like, it's going to come up. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, especially for people that grew up in that are my age and grew up and watched it and saw it all unfold. They're not going to let that go. So, sorry, KD. You're just going to have to win something without Steph. But, again, that's all I got for y'all this week. I appreciate everybody that listens and tunes in. I'll holler at y'all.